Hello and welcome to Doc Young's Wrestling Weekly. My name is Victor Sosa, joined, as always, by the legend Les Thatcher. We are here just about each and every Friday, but this is not your ordinary Friday. In fact, Les, as I understand it, you can pretty much go anywhere you want and at least get a free dessert. Is that fair?
I think so.
If not a free meal,
I'm worth it.
If not a free meal, then a free dessert.
I am worth a free dessert. Yeah. Today, believe it or not, is my 82nd birthday. That's what I said. I said the same thing. I know, you know, I've been on Facebook this morning and you know, answering some of these, you know, so many people sent me such, you know, nice birthday, you know, wishes and all that. And I so appreciate everybody on Twitter and Facebook that's done that. But yeah, I'm thinking a couple of them, you know, I said, I'm just looking and I realize I'm still above ground, which surprises the hell out of me too. I thought, really, you're still alive and relatively healthy. So yeah, it's, of course, what are you going to do? I said, at this point, I just exist. That's what I'm going to do. But you know, I mentioned to you before we started recording, there's a lady outside of Kenya, Africa, who is, she's an American, and she's over there teaching at a Christian school. And this lady, her name's Gay, and last name starts with M, and I can't remember, but she had contacted me, I guess we've been friends on Facebook probably maybe a year now. But anyway, she's a wrestling fan, obviously, as well. And so this morning, she sent me a video of a group of her the African children waving together saying happy birthday, and said, you know, see what God's doing on a hillside outside of Kenya. And I thought, this is beautiful. And you know, it's things like that separate I don't know, from the norm and stand out. And my God, that was beautiful, I thought. So yeah, I've had, and I'm trying to answer them all, and I know I'll miss out on some, it's, you know, it's that special to realize that made people remember or think about you. And so yeah, and it's a lot of years, isn't it?
It is.
Do you look back and what do you think? I think, wow, it's a lot of years. You know, I've been blessed. I have to have friends like you and to have been able to do what I've done. And if the good Lord decides today is the last day of my life and he takes me tomorrow, I have a few regrets, I'm sure, but one of them would be that I haven't booked AEW. No, that's not it. Or I learned from the Booker of the Year. No, yeah, you know, I have a few regrets, but I've had a good life, you know, and wrestling has been such a huge, huge part of that. And I'm proud of the things I have done in wrestling and proud of things I'm still capable of doing if allowed. So, but anyway, one of the things I want to start with, because last week we had Thomas on, and I don't know how everybody, you know, if you listen, you know that if you're an independent promoter, this is a guy you want to contact if you need help, because he's certainly in a position to do that. And so we didn't get to talk about a lot of wrestling. But I want to go back a week from this past Wednesday, and the mass travel agent that sits at the desk with JR and Taz and them, I want to straighten his ass out, okay? Because they were in Cincinnati, and while Mox was in the ring, he's talking about how he came from the east side of Cincinnati. Like it was the mean streets or like tough growing, you know. Let me explain to you about the east side of Cincinnati, where I grew up. I don't know about mean streets. Now, I didn't live in any of these communities, but let me mention Indian Hill, where mansions were owned by Mike Brown, who's the owner of the Cincinnati Bengals, Marge Schott, who used to be the owner of the Cincinnati Reds, Pete Rose, who is a former Major League Baseball player. You've heard of Peter Frampton, the musician, and Jerry Garcia from the Grateful Dead. They all own mansions in the main streets of the east side of Cincinnati. And then there's Hyde Park, which is also an upper scale and an older neighborhood of mansions and wealth. Then there's Mariemont, which is upper middle class. And then there's Terrace Park. Now, the mean streets that I lived, I don't have that kind of money. My family never had that kind of money. But where I lived, I'm 15, I'm at worst with a bad traffic light, 6 or 7 minutes from Terrace Park, 15 minutes from Indian Hill to visit with Peter Frampton if I knew him, 15 minutes from Mariemont, and about 20, 25 minutes from Hyde Park. They're all on the east side of Cincinnati. So tell that asshole to kiss my butt, please. That's the way I'm starting my birthday on a podcast. But yeah, we didn't grow up in poverty, but we damn sure didn't grow up in wealth either. And I can't speak for Mox, but I have no fear of speaking for myself and saying I'm proud of where the hell I grew up in Cincinnati. And I didn't have to fight my way to school or home. So there you have it.
Well, while we're busy straightening things out, that has already taken place since that was a week or two ago. Why don't we just talk about what has somehow made its way back around to being the top story this week on the Observer website. It's actually the lead story of this week's issue of the Observer up at f4wonline.com regarding CM Punk, the Bucks, and the Elite, and potentially Chris Jericho as well. I bring up Chris Jericho less because before I get to what's written in the Observer, I want to mention something to you that was reported by the good folks at Fightful Select yesterday. They say they were told by numerous sources that Jericho approached Punk after that locker room altercation and the nature of the scrum where CM Punk gave those rather pointed comments that had taken place earlier that evening. It's alleged here, Fightful Select's reporting says Jericho told Punk that he was a cancer to the locker room and a detriment to the company. Punk basically replied, allegedly, that none of this stuff was Jericho's business and he needed to leave, which implies to me that Jericho also, at some point, entered the locker room.
Well, no, I hadn't read that in the Observer, but wow, there are so many people there that should have, you know, Punk was wrong. Punk was wrong. But, you know, we've seen it. We won't build a lot of time around it. Five of the biggest houses that this company's ever had. Guess who was featured?
CM Punk.
Yeah, exactly. And the returning prodigal's kids or sons or whatever the hell they are weren't part of that number. I mean, they might have been part of the show, but they weren't, you know. So anyway, it is what it is. And let's face it, it's political here. And you know, Jericho, I would have approached it a little different than that because I would have tried to save keeping the guy on. I would have, you know. And again, we know, I think we knew from the get-go who Tony Khan was going to keep because they were his executive vice presidents. And so, you know, it's a shame. Now, so I don't know if Punk's talked to WWE or somebody said, well, Hunter said it under the right surface. I don't know if any of that's true or it's not true, and I don't care. But what happened with Punk and on the camera that night should not have happened. Tony Khan should have tried to shut it down then and taken it all to the back and talked about it back then. But, of course, that didn't happen. And so it has grown into the Watergate of wrestling, I guess. I don't know. But we got to get past it. Will Punk get back into business with WWE or something? I don't know. I'm sure he doesn't need the money. And quite frankly, if he doesn't, I think Tony Khan's, you know, was I critical of Punk's work on some occasions when he first came back? I was, because he wasn't in shape to be in the ring. And I think that was apparent. But again, he worked around that because, you know, his promo skills are, you know, very capable. So anyway, that's a shame. That's a shame. And I would have, had I have been in Chris's situation, I would have tried to, you know, to salvage some of this opposed to, you know, but he's right. And when, you know, I don't know about Punk being a cancer. I don't know what he talked about off camera to people. I don't know if he went around politicking saying, this guy's need to go and I need to stay. I don't know any of that. But just on what I saw on the surface, I wouldn't approach it that way. But then I'm not Chris, and I'm not making seven figures a year to be in that company. So, you know, I'm sure, and, you know, in the back, he's also protecting his spot and his money.
Well,
aren't we all trying to do that at some point?
We certainly are. To piggyback off of that, in this week's Observer, the lead story, Dave mentions this past Wednesday on Dynamite, it was noted that several of the top people were saying Punk would not be back. And a few names were mentioned, with Chris Jericho being the name mentioned most, but that many, if not most, of the key top names were saying they would not work with Punk. One top star noted, and Dave quotes this here, "Punk won't be back. His value on screen isn't 1% worth the hassle and black cloud he causes backstage." So that's their take on it.
Well, you know what? Here again, you and I not knowing. We haven't been backstage, nor is any writers that I'm aware of on this site. And maybe I'm wrong. I don't know. Maybe they've been backstage all the time. Anyway, if that's the case, then yes, I won't disagree that he needed to go. But was he of value on camera? Yes, he was. So, you know, there again, you weigh the yin and the yang and decide which way to go. You obviously do. But from that night and watching the promo and realizing all these names that had been sent home and suspended, I'll tell you the truth. I'm not a gambler, but if you'd have said, Les, I'll give you big odds and make you a lot of money, but I'm going to bet that the Young Bucks and Omega won't be back and Punk will, I'd have said, Vic, I'm taking your bet. Because it never crossed my mind that they would be gone and he would be back. Simply because of the politics of the thing, period. Is it that they're better draw? No. But if he is a cancer behind the scenes, believe me, I think everybody politics to a certain degree. Everybody. I leave nobody out. But I don't know that Punk is a politician. I know I'm not a good politician. Won't try to tell you I am, and well, never tried
in all seriousness, wasn't that part of the problem almost every place else he's been, is that he wasn't a politician?
I would guess, yeah. I would guess that's a fact. Again, I've always felt your work should speak for you. And that's, again, because this is not a shoot business. It comes back to your opinion versus my opinion many times. You know, it's when we talk about, well, WWE released so many guys. Okay, you can figure some of those were that guy smiled at the wrong people in the wrong way, or didn't smile at the right people in the right way, or whatever. But it wasn't because they didn't have talent or because there wasn't something that you could have taken and built them and made them marketable. It had to do with personalities. But that's in any business, right? How many DJs over the years you've been working a radio circuit that you know have been cut loose because they couldn't get along with management?
More than a few.
Yeah, exactly. So it's not like it's uncommon in any business. You know, it's not. So again, you know, Punk set this in motion, and that's. It created what we're about to see, or what we're seeing unfold in front of us. Good, bad, or indifferent, it's over and it's done with. And it's sad and it's a shame. But we also found out later on with the Spanish God that it's not all, you know, that Punk wasn't obviously the only person that created problems in the back. You know, and that shouldn't be happening anywhere. You know, it's not uncommon, but most places they try to, they squelch it quickly and nip it in the bud and move past it, and it never makes it to public consumption. But of course, with social media, it's hard to keep things away from the public. But, you know, it's sad. It's just sad, you know. But everybody, you know, it's about moving on. I do want to say that my thoughts and prayers are with the cowboy, you know.
with Paige. With his concussion. Yeah.
Yeah. When I saw him go down, I was afraid he broke his neck. I'll be honest with you, because when I saw his, he didn't take that bump straight over. He twisted in midair and came down crooked. And I, oh hell! I will say this for Moxley and Regal and those guys and MJF, they covered. They filled it. They filled it. Did a professional job of doing that. Am I surprised that they lost almost a half a million viewers from open to end? Absolutely not. I'm surprised they didn't lose more than that, because until it got down to the Cowboy and Mox, I didn't see much that I was conservative watching, to be honest with you.
Well, you just reminded me that I'll have to scroll down here in the Observer, which I have on the computer in front of me, and see if Dave has the quarter hours for this past Wednesday. But while I look for that, why don't you tell me what you thought, or some quick thoughts at least, on the stuff you saw this week?
Well, I'll tell you what. Raw on Monday, was the fact that their numbers are down doesn't surprise me in the least. It was not a strong show. There was a lot of talk and not a lot of wrestling. Obviously, I didn't think that the women, the storyline was that compelling at the end to bring the numbers up significantly for Bayley and Belair. But I will say that last Friday night, now I don't know what tonight's going to bring, but last Friday night was a strong show for SmackDown. For me, the last few weeks has been a stronger show than Raw. And part of that is because if I had a vote today on the strongest faction in the sport or in the business that I have seen, so I don't get a chance to watch Impact. I've mentioned that on here before. And I don't get a chance to watch the NWA, so I couldn't say about that. But between WWE and AEW, the Bloodline are king of the hill as far as a faction. The Usos and Sami Zayn have picked the ball up and carried it with the new Soho or whatever, how you want to pronounce it. That's strong. Those guys have stepped up and are kicking ass, to be quite frank. Now, I'm watching last Friday. I thought, wow, they're on here a lot, which you hear from a lot. That guy was on a lot. They're on there a lot, but the way they're positioned last Friday is you didn't mind. And they, again, are making it. I know the business is at work before anybody calls me on that, but they're giving you some believability. They are drawing you in and making you want to believe. Jay and Jimmy have stepped up like crazy. If I have to have a character, and I've said this before, give me Sami Zayn. His character is believable. As I said to you before we started recording, we all know somebody that's like that. And it's not so over the top like the cartoon characters on AEW. And he can work his ass off. And the way they've worked him, realize, and then stop and say, how long have we been watching this go and build with Roman and then bringing the Usos involved and then Sammy's involvement? And how many storylines could you get out of this? Because in talking to somebody about it the other day, okay, Jimmy is kind of, Jay is kind of easing into kind of getting along with Sammy, but how long is that going to last? And Jay going off the deep end, is Roman going to get on Jay about that? Or is, because Sammy said, we're going to take care of this, Roman, is he going to go to Sammy and say, wait a minute, this is on you? You don't know what they're doing, and that makes this palatable and interesting, and you want to see where it's going. And I can't say I found that with any much of anything else on either show right now. I'm happy to see Gallows and Anderson back, and it appears they're going to be used properly this time. And they're a hell of a team. And Carl is a hell of a worker. And Gallows is entertaining as well. So, you know, but to me, the Bloodline and Sammy, man, they're carrying the ball without Roman. Am I right?
Yes, that is true, because he is not there more weeks than not, and those guys have stepped the game up.
Yes, they have. Yes, they have. So, yeah, and that's strong. That's strong. I want to mention the drop in the audience from the Cincinnati, you know, and I know it's been laid off of baseball or football or basketball or street hockey or
different night
playing canasta or whatever. Okay. No, let's take that all back. Believe it if you like. or if that's your out, then use it and jump the hell out. I've always been told in my 62 years by people smarter at this business than I am, and there are a bunch, if your product is hot and you got what they want to see, they're going to come. Or in this case, they're going to tune in. Was baseball on? It was. You know what? Some people record wrestling. If I'm watching this and this wrestling show is so hot and I don't want to miss it, I'm going to record baseball. Are you going to lose a certain amount of fans? Yes, you certainly are. Because that's just natural, because somebody's going to like baseball better than wrestling, no matter what you're giving them. But I told you this, I think, off the air last week. I mentioned it to you, but I'm going to mention it on the air. Back in the day, Luther Lindsay, a dear friend with a great sense of humor, we were in Hampton, Rhodes Coliseum in Hampton, Virginia. I don't remember what the main event was, but the town hadn't drawn like everybody, like they expected, off the angle. So it was, everybody's sitting in the dress room, and people were saying, wow, you know, maybe it's because of this, maybe it's because of that. And Luther said, you know what, I just opened my excuse book to page 42, the second column, and it says, here's a good excuse. Seal Test is releasing their flavor of the month ice cream tonight. So everyone's run to the Seal Test store to try that out, and that's why they're not watching wrestling. It's meant as a joke, but it's true that you can make all the excuses you want. I'm going to tell you now, that show in Cincinnati was not strong until it got the Mox and the Cowboy. The fact that Castle, and Chris lost, I know why. That was bad. I mean, it was bad. And the fact that the next segment went even lower, that doesn't surprise me either, because one of the people there, I've been saying all along, needs to more experience, better, you know, needs to be better and more of a talented professional to carry it. And I don't care if Moxley and Cowboy had gone out there naked to wrestle the main event. They wouldn't have pulled it back to a number that meant anything. So, yeah, I'm not surprised. And baseball had something to do with it, but baseball didn't do all the damage. AEW did the damage themselves. And, yes, I'm willing to argue that with anybody or go to whatever you want. But, yeah. And, again, I'm not – like I said, Raw was bad on Monday. I think NXT is picking up steam, and they're adding some characters that are, you know, I shouldn't say characters, some wrestlers that are, you know, are helping out as well. But, yeah, so that's my story. And I want to see AEW do well. I do, because there's a lot of people there that I like, that are friends, that I've worked with, that I've helped train, I want to see them do well. So it's a shame. It's bad booking. And yes, I said that, and you can call Tony and tell him if you like. I don't care. He needs help.
Well, let's take a peek through the quarter hours for Dynamite. Speaking of Tony needing a little bit of assistance here, we'll do that in just a second. First, Les, though, I want you to have the opportunity to let everybody know, since you mentioned you're still very happy to ply your trade in terms of bookings, training camps, appearances, and the like, where they can get a hold of you.
Well, you can reach me, lesthatcher28@gmail.com. Send me an email. I'd still love to do training camps, weekend training camps, or even one-day seminars. But drop me a line. I'll certainly be happy to contact, get back to you, let you know what all I offer, pricing, et cetera, et cetera. And I will guarantee you that I will work my butt off to help promote your event if I'm involved, and we will promote it on this show, and I will come in to be hands-on and work my ass off to leave. When I leave, that I leave the people participating with something they can use to better their careers or better your promotion. So, yeah, drop me a line. I'd be more than happy to get with you.
All right, my friend. So I have plucked these right out of the Observer to take a look at what happened on Dynamite this week. And boy, we talk about Chris Jericho and reference politicians and Jericho signing a new deal with additional responsibilities, locker room leaders and all that stuff. It appears as though Chris Jericho this week found a way to avoid being in that show closing spot where he had lost several hundred thousand viewers the last couple of times he was in it. That's by figuring out how to get in the opener. Jericho and Garcia with Castagnoli and Wheeler Yuta opened the show this week, and believe it or not, actually, you should easily believe it because this has been the pattern for most weeks recently. That first quarter was, in fact, the highest rated quarter on the show. So I wonder if everybody heard about that after the fact. That one drew 1.076 million viewers. And basically, the first several quarters stuck up over that 1 million mark, which include Renee Paquette's with Brian Danielson and Wheeler Yuta, that Young Bucks and Omega video where they kept disappearing. The start of
and damn it, they kept coming back. Well, I had hoped that was telling me something, but it wasn't.
Apparently not. FTR versus Strickland and Lee also stayed up above a million. It started at 1.075, went into another quarter, which finished at 1.037. Didn't get under a million until the conclusion of the Danielson Guevara match. The start of that match did 1.021, which, of course, that quarter also included MJF and Stokely Hathaway, which we'll talk about in a little bit, and the package for the Kingdom, Matt Taven and Mike Bennett with Samoa Joe and Wardlow in that match as well. You've also got, what else did, oh, Jamie Hayter and Riho did 927. A bunch of interviews with Kingston, the Darby Allin video package, setting up the match with Jay Lethal, and the start of the main event with Mox and Penta did 906 and rallied for 955 in the final quarter.
All right. You know what? The thing that was, I said this to you, and the only thing I found consistent on that show was outside interference in every friggin' match and almost every promo. Renee is top dollar, and I don't mean that top dollar either. Okay. She is worth her whatever you're paying her.
Yes.
She's good at her job. She's a pro. But you're having, not only was there a run-in in every frigging match, outside interference in every frigging match, the main of with the opening match, it was less than a minute in and they had outside interference. The consistency is the outside interference. And that's crazy. You're wearing it out. And I know that old man keeps saying that, and the old man's going to continue to say it because it's true. Been there, done that, seen it done numerous times. And, it's crazy. You know, it makes no sense to have all these run-ins to me, a run-in and a big schmoz should be a surprise and quick and hard and hit and go. And what kind of surprise is it if you come to the ring with a cast of thousands walking out with you? At this point, I'm saying, which one's going to jump in and help their buddy out first? Because, you know, it's going to happen. And in this day and age, because everyone thinks they're smart, everyone wants to be smart, surprise is your strongest weapon. Because there is no element in surprise in this company about run-ins because they're happening in every friggin' match. And the only thing you're doing is weakening the response of the guys in the ring that they can't handle it themselves. Or the run-ins not even sometimes not to help somebody. It's just because the guys are, it seems like they're passing through. I mean, it makes no sense. And it's not good. It's not good. I just, you know, it baffles me that they continue to do that. And Tony Khan needs help with booking or someone that he's willing to, if it's Jericho, if it's Moxley, or if it's somebody he's paid $10 trillion to a minute, then listen. Or if you're the guy, it's the money guy and you're supposed to be a consultant and you're afraid of rocking the boat because you won't get your money, then you're not of any value as a consultant because you need to be honest with this guy or somebody needs to be. That's a fact. But Renee is so valuable, but let her do some sit downs with something. Now I know that's supposed to be coming up in next week's Dynamite or something. Yeah, she's supposed to sit with Saraya and Britt Baker. But if you have a run-in or they're, you know, let them actually do 3 or 4 minutes of legitimate questions and legitimate answers and try to set the stage for something that actually comes across as legitimate, you know? It's just too much of of the same thing over and over and over. And I'm sorry, you know, you want to do something goofy? I made a joke of this when I was talking to Vic before we started the show. Moxley comes out through the tunnel, and the next town you have him in, he spits water on the floor, and have the heel he's going to supposed to work with, have the city policeman there arrest him for spitting in a public place. And it's not funny, and it's stupid.
Right.
But it fits right in. I'm sorry, it fits right in. It's like scissors and other things. I'm sorry. It's just, it's, and then, will Eric Bischoff and Tony Khan have a match at some point?
You would think so, the way Tony was talking the other day.
You know what? Tony Khan made some good points. Trouble is, he's not adhering to those points. Every match doesn't have to be an angle, but it appears that, you know, and when you have your top stars carry Mr. We can't remember his name for 20 minutes, that's not a positive for your top star either. And never mind. Never mind.
But for anybody who's not familiar with this dust-up between Tony and Eric, apparently Eric, whether it was on his podcast or someplace else, made the comment essentially saying that not every match has an angle or some kind of story attached to it. There's too much random stuff happening on Dynamite, to which Tony apparently took great offense to. He was on Busted Open Radio on Sirius XM the other day. And he said, as you pointed out, that every match on every show should have a long storyline built into what's taking place, is what basically Eric was saying. And Tony pointed out it just doesn't need to be the case for every single match. And he correctly pointed out that a lot of terrific editions of Nitro, when that company was really hot, featured a lot of random lucha matches or other unexpected pairings that you never would have thought of yourself, and then saw them on TV and realized how well they worked. So Eric was actually pretty good at doing that same thing that he was criticizing Tony for. And then it gets into...
Can
the
I interrupt thing. Just a second
Please
there?
Please do, yes.
Okay, now... The lucha matches on WCW, as well as the cruiserweight. This is where Jericho, Benoit, Guerrero, Eddie, Malenko, these guys got over like $1 million. But here's the point. They're in those matches that they had good matches because the matchups were proper, but they also wasn't an outside interference. There was a match with a finish. And that's how Jericho, Benoit, Guerrero, Malenko, and the Lucha guys got over, because it wasn't used for 16 other guys to run in and do scissors and all this gaga. That's a fact, too. Those matches were made to showcase the two people in the match, you know, and possibly get one of them over, their hand raised. It's, you know, it's like I made this mention to my friend Jim. What match was it on WWE where they counted the women out? When was the last time you heard anybody get counted out in the ring, out of the ring? I mean, if you count to 100, sometimes you might count somebody out, right? But it's not consistent. You have to be, I don't care what it is you're doing, you need to be consistent with it. And that's the other thing that AEW is not consistent. This whole nonsense, okay, I called them on this Wednesday night. I mentioned there was outside interference a minute or so into the first frigging match. And now we know that the referees have sent people to the back. Why weren't these people sent to the back? Because they had more interference to do right later. There's no consistency. If you can count two people out, then damn near every match you could count everybody out, because they go out and spend more time outside than they do in, and the referee stands and watches, and I don't know what they're doing while they're watching, but they're watching, but they're not counting. So consistency is part of the problem with, and that's not just in AEW, that's in WWE as well. So I'm picking in general. I'm not picking on one particular company in that regard. Makes sense?
Does. Makes a ton of sense. I like to point something out that is something along those lines, just in terms of stuff that's, you know, that I think is executed well, but is, I guess I'll use misplaced. And what I'm referring to is the stuff with MJF and The Firm this week, and the stuff that closed the show with MJF and Moxley fighting side by side, I thought all of that was done really well. And I like the idea of it. The visual was good at the end of the show with MJF and Moxley and the common enemy and looking at each other and all that stuff. But Stokely Hathaway and the firm shook MJF's hand literally 15 minutes ago. Like, why are we doing this a few weeks into this partnership where none of us are invested in this thing? We're assuming that, and listen, you and I are into the business enough to know that the two of them do have a relationship going way back to MJF getting started. But even if you say that, you haven't given them enough time to put a friendship on television to drive that point home. So why are we doing this now?
Yeah, and there's no it's not consistent with any storyline. You're right. Okay, and I mentioned to you, the finish to that show Wednesday night, let's improve it, okay?
All right.
When MJF played it so pretty, and then he finally jumped in, okay, he and Moxley should have kicked ass. And then when there was nobody left standing but the two of them, they're back to back, and all of a sudden they turn and see each other and grin and start throwing punches at each other. And this is where, if, and I say it's if because it's not, there's no way that anybody wearing a security shirt in AEW has respect of anybody watching that show, because they have been abused beyond recognition. But if you actually had security guys that were allowed to stop things instead of just waving their arms and taking bumps, then Mox and MJF could have thrown three or four shots at each other, and the security guys are there pulling them apart, and you're going off the air. But here again, this could go back to Dusty and Magnum TA. This could go back to Macho Man Randy Savage and Hulk Hogan. But you realize what a superpower these two guys as a friggin' tag team would be? And maybe they're going that way, but they lost a great opportunity to close that show with a tight storyline that's still up in the air. I hope I'm making sense.
You are.
Am I?
Yeah, absolutely.
So, but you need security people that actually are allowed. They can actually maybe even stop some women don't have to take bumps for the women too. So, but yeah, this is a reason you think ahead. You don't try to, cover your ass coming from behind. It don't make any sense. Because you're going to end up losing out in many respects. So, yeah, Eric Bischoff makes good points. Tony doesn't understand the points. He makes good points, but he doesn't follow up on his good points either. So
plenty of blame to go around.
There certainly is. And there is that talent. AEW has a talent to do some really, really great things. But I don't see that's going to happen either since the executive VPs are back.
Yeah, it does appear as though their return is imminent. Obviously, you wouldn't have put that vignette on television if you hadn't. It was interesting the route they chose to go with that vignette. Obviously, there was nothing that actually said in terms of a voiceover in the piece that they were returning soon. In fact, they kept disappearing, which I wondered if it was a reference to the 200,000 viewers they made disappear when Kenny Omega came back in 2 weeks in a row where they and Bucks were the main event. But I digress. They are, in fact, on their way back, so we'll see exactly what happens with that. Talk to me about FTR losing to Strickland and Lee. So I have kind of mixed feelings about this. On one hand, I actually like the thing they're doing here with Strickland and Lee, in that the last few weeks, it does appear as though Swerve is slowly turning heel, but he's doing it in full view of everybody except Keith Lee. So Lee hasn't quite caught up to it because a couple of shady things Swerve has done. Lee wasn't on the show, so we presume he wasn't there. I'd like to think he'd watch the show, but you know what? It's not like I go home and listen to the radio all day, so I'll give him that. But the idea that they won due to subterfuge over FTR that Lee did not see, he thinks they won honestly, is an interesting one to me. Yet on the other hand, I have my head in my hands that why is it that the moment FTR actually even mentions the AEW Tag Team Championships, they are promptly swept out of contention?
Well, they're supposed to be because the vice presidents are coming back.
Maybe that's
and you wouldn't want the vice president to have to actually learn to work for the, with those guys.
God forbid.
Well, but you know, that's the other thing too. We have seen, here is the revival, Dax and company, who have all these belts. We've seen Dax doing jobs in singles matches. We haven't seen, and Strickland and Lee, it's really the first title, you know, anything to do with their title or them coming back, and it should have been a strong match, but they shouldn't have looked at the lights. But they had to look at the lights because Lee and those guys need to wrestle the guys who now have that AD, the AEW titles, because if it had to be FTR, that means that the VPs would have to maybe end up wrestling them at some point. And I don't know if that's the politics. That's what I hear. I don't know for certain. But anyway, yeah, FTR should come back. Should have come back with a couple strong wins over middle of the road guys. You know, five, maybe 10 minute matches, but they're dominating. They get a couple wins, and then you set up something like this with Lee and Strickland. But that's the other thing too. You're not using anything, and I think that's part of what Bischoff's talking about. And maybe he's not saying it that way, but you know, in other words, what I'm saying is, for Lee and Strickland to get their hands raised in this match, there should have been a setup because FTR hasn't been predominant in the tag team scene for, what, a couple months now, right?
Yeah.
So we should have established again, because you may have some new viewers that have never watched AEW until the last few weeks. So, yeah, you got to look at these things, you know. I said, as an when I'm doing independent promotion, if there's, you know, if I'm trying to build something, I've also always in my mind, there are people here tonight that don't know Vic and Les are in a feud. So we need to, we don't need to go back and relive the whole thing necessarily, but we need something to let those people know why we're at this point. And, you know, well, if you watch a TV series, when Law and Order opens this week, if it's a continuing story, which sometimes Law and Order is not, and most of the time it's not, but if you've got a lead story, you're going to run a little bit of that video from last week's show at the opening, and then you're going into your to pick up the story from that point on, right?
Yes.
Okay, that's what I'm getting at, and they don't do that, and this is why when Thomas was on with us last week, he mentioned, and I never made a big deal out of it, but he was saying about, I know what's going to go on in my company for a year. Where am I going to be? And I booked backwards. And I never said it. I meant to say it, and we got off onto something else. Boys and girls, that's what the great bookers of my lifetime always did, is, okay, Les and Vic are going to work a six-week program. We're going to blow it off with this kind of match. And to get there, what are we going to do? Well, let's go back up and see. So that's my point. Good stories draw you in before they give you the big bang, right?
Right.
And that's Tony is giving you the big bang without the story too often. Now, he can be mad at me if he'd like, but if he wants to discuss it, it's going to cost him. I won't take Jericho money, but I would take it, but I won't ask for it. Let's say, put it that way. Whatever. We've got a sponsor, have we not?
Well, you know, it's funny. I was just about to mention that a lot of people are probably not aware of this, Les. It's not common knowledge, but I'm not the computer savvy one between the two of us. And so I called you in a frenzied panic the other day asking about this sort of thing. And Les is the one who actually set me straight on this NordVPN business.
Do I owe you money? No, you know what? I'm going to say, too, this NordVPN. For the people that have listened to us for quite some time, you know I am not computer savvy in any way, shape, or form. I'm as dumb as it comes. But I see the value in this. I really do. And you get a 3-month trial, right? Don't cost you a thing.
That's
but
correct.
What I like about this, first of all, you know, I got hacked, it's been almost 2 years ago now. I got my bank account cleaned out and the whole nine yards. But this company with this cybersecurity thing, VPN, they encrypt your stuff until they unencrypt it. And now I know what that means because I read spy novels, right? but if you held a gun to my head and said, "Let's encrypt your email," I'd say, "Shoot me," because I don't know how. But if you have this service, you are encrypted, your security and email. But more importantly, you're more learned about this, Vic. Explain, like, let's say there's I'm a soccer fan, and there's a big pro soccer match in England that I'm unable to get. How does this company help?
Well, with NordVPN, what you can do is switch the virtual location of your computer. Every computer has an IP address, right? And that code allows different websites, merchants, and things of that nature to know where you are, essentially. With NordVPN, you can use a virtual location where whatever you're using or whatever site you're accessing does not know your true location. For example, I could be in New York, and to your example, if there was a soccer game somewhere around the world that I wanted to watch that wasn't available in the States, with NordVPN, if the game was in Portugal, it would look to the website where I could watch the game that I was accessing it from Portugal, therefore it would give me access to that. I can switch my virtual location to a country that is showing the event I want to watch so that I don't miss out and can watch the action live. And to your point about the whole bank thing a couple of years ago, you know, not only does this thing help save you money, but it protects you from cybercrime when you can change your virtual location and do things like signing up for subscription services or pay your bills while you're using the VPN as opposed to the traditional internet connection. And the best thing of all, I think, Les, is the price. It's essentially a cup of coffee every month. And you're talking about cybersecurity in 2022 and being able to access an incredible amount of content from all over the world. So it's a great deal to me.
Well, and reading up on a little bit, and God knows I'm not an expert, as I keep saying, if I want to book a flight or a holiday via another country and pay less, NordVPN helps me do that, right?
You can do just about anything with the ability to have that virtual location thanks to NordVPN. And it's also the fastest VPN in the world. So if you're a gamer or you like streaming a lot of things, you can do two things at once. So you can be gaming and streaming or anything else you want, and NordVPN is not going to cause any buffering or lag time on your connection, whether you're using Twitch or doing something else with it. You know, you're not going to experience any interruptions in service utilizing NordVPN. And as you referenced too, Les, about this exclusive deal, you can grab one too by going to NordVPN.com/F4W. Not only will you get a huge discount off your NordVPN plan, but you also are going to get 4 months free, and it's completely risk-free on top of that with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. So there's really nothing to lose here.
Man, it sounds good. And believe it or not, this idiot not only celebrated his 82nd birthday today, he's going to explore this, read up on it more, and man, I'm going to see if I can't hook up. And it sounds good to me, Vic.
Well, listen, I would definitely want to hear about how this free trial works out if you sign up. I presume that you will, because pretty soon you'll be calling me and the phone will say, like, Japan, because you'll be using a VoIP. And it'll be less. I'm like, when did you go to Tokyo? I don't know. I'm still in Knoxville. It's okay.
The folks
at NordVPN are doing great things here, and you've got an opportunity to get a deal at NordVPN.com/F4W. So perhaps while you're doing your due diligence on a potential subscription to NordVPN, you'll be watching SmackDown tonight. And if you do that, you'll be watching on FS1 because Game 1 of the World Series is tonight, and that's going to be on Fox. So obviously, SmackDown realizes, the folks, the brain trust of WWE, that they're going to lose some audience, but they also want to do what they can to get as many people to move to FS1 as they can, which is why tonight is a return after a few weeks away of Roman Reigns. You've also got a SmackDown Women's Championship Open Challenge, Ronda Rousey, obviously an opponent we will not find out about until the show. You've got Sami Zayn and Solo Sikoa together against Ridge Holland and Butch, and Hit Row in action with a mystery partner in a six-person match against Legado del Fantasma, Santos Escobar, Joaquin Wilde, and Cruz del Toro. So it'll be interesting to see who that mystery partner is, because obviously when they were in NXT, they had Swerve Strickland, and that will not be happening on this particular Friday night. I can promise you that.
So, yeah, that's, You know, yeah, I'm anxious to see SmackDown tonight to see if they keep the ball rolling in that positive direction that we saw last week. And, yeah, it's, and like I said, the draw for me on Friday night is Sammy and, you know, the Bloodline and how good they have come. And again, it's, you know, when I talk about taking time to build talents, time to build angles, time to build storylines, they've proven it on SmackDown with the Bloodline, because that's gone on. How long has Roman been the champion now?
Oh, God. You know what? I'm going to look that up, because obviously it's been, what, it's got to be close to 18 months, if not longer, right? Maybe closer.
Yeah,
to,
yeah.
Because I know a while back they had been doing this thing on social media, and I don't know if they still are or not, where every so often they'd put up a tweet or a post on Facebook or Instagram about how many days it's been since he won the title, how many days it's been since he's actually been pinned in a match, and all that stuff. So let me Google this here just to give you an exact number. Let's see.
Right.
In 2022, he became the longest reigning Universal Champion at 789 plus days. Do I have an actual number of how long Roman's is? Let's see. Complete title history of the Universal Championship here on the WWE website. Let's see. It is Roman Reigns currently listed at 788 days of the Universal Championship reign. So,
wow.
Yeah. I believe that's the number according to the WWE website. Let's put it that way. If it's not up to date, then it's on them. August 30th, 2020.
Right.
There's the exact number, Les. That's apparently when he, I don't remember the date, but that must be when he won the title. 2020,
wow.
August 30th of 2020, man. When was the last time they did, even in the height of the Attitude Era, Les, which had record box office, record ratings, ratings in this system that they may be destined to never repeat or get again, that title was changing hands every few weeks between Rock, Austin,
yeah.
Triple H, even Kane and McFoley,
sure,
getting runs. It was not uncommon for that title to change hands almost on a monthly basis.
And you know, the thing I'm going to mention too, when you mentioned August of 2020, I thought, damn.
Yeah.
But stop and think about this. If you watch, now I'm not saying there hasn't been any critical comments about this, but there hasn't been a big wave of people saying, damn, how long they gonna let Roman wear that title, or damn, I'm getting tired of these guys, or that, or the Bloodline, or this or that, because they have ingrained themselves into the fabric of this, of that SmackDown show. Can we accept them, right? I mean, like I said earlier last week, and I realized toward the end of the show, I thought, damn, the Bloodline has been a big part of this show throughout, and yet I'm not sitting here saying, damn, I'm tired of looking at them, because the segments have been A, entertaining, B, relatively believable, and C, well played by the guys involved. So it's not rocket science. It's not something I invented or those guys invented. It's been good. That's the way it was 62 years ago and counting, and that's the way it should be today. And everybody's trying to reinvent the wheel, and the wheel works really fine if you use it properly. And I think Roman and the Bloodline are showing us that it can be used properly.
It has been a remarkable reversal of fortune for Roman Reigns with the WWE audience. To your point, you talk about not just the booing and all the stuff that he had to go through, and you know, just everything with so many people understanding that this was Vince's selection and they were doing everything they could to fight it. And maybe Roman really wasn't 100% ready for that spot at the time. But we've gone from not just not wanting Roman Reigns in that spot and not just asking when fill in the blank champion is finally going to lose this title so we can move on. The question we've been asking ourselves really since the entirety of his reign is, when are they going to get somebody worthy enough to get in the ring with Roman Reigns?
Thank you. You've covered it, man.
Yeah.
That's it.
Every month, it's like, how are we going to find an opponent?
That's the game that was played with the NWA champion back when I was active. You know, whether it was Pat O'Connor, Buddy Rogers, Harley Race, Ric Flair, Dory, Terry, whoever, Jack Briscoe, whoever, was who can beat this guy? Not how quick can we get rid of him? So, yeah. That's the secret, but it's not really a secret. It's just common sense if you understand the wrestling business. And, you know, I saw a great little clip on Twitter this past week. Benoit and Kurt Angle doing sit-outs and switches. Did you see it?
No, but just hearing those two names and remembering what those matches were like, yeah, I can imagine.
And I reposted it and put the note on there. Professional wrestlers wrestling. How clever.
Yeah.
Right? And one of the kids that, I say a kid because it almost had to be a young guy, had posted, he said, I watched this and it was speeded up. And then I realized it wasn't speeded up. It was it was at real time. And that's the way, that's a wrestling match. I said, thank you. Yes, that's it. That's it. I'd like to find that whole match. I would. It slipped my mind how great that Chris and Kurt were together. My God. But yeah, for you guys thinking you want to be in the business or are you in the business, would you like to see a legitimate two guys working a shoot, basically? If you find it, watch it. There's a clip of it on Twitter. It's on my page on Twitter, I know. But yeah. I said, it's what this business is meant to be and what it should be again. And yes, I'm old, and yes, I believe in doing it the right way. So shoot me. I don't care. In fact, at this age, you might be putting me out of my misery. You know, I know we're about running short. I do want to say, if I don't get to everybody on Twitter and Facebook to say thank you for the birthday wishes and the congratulations and the things like thank you, what you give to the business and this and that, I do so appreciate it and love you all. And I love the business. And I won't say I hope I live another 82 years because I damn sure don't want to do that. But let me die doing something wrestling related, please.
You know what? You know what? I don't even want to say that because then folks won't call for a training seminar. Never mind. We'll move on.
All right.
Well, we are winding down this edition of Doc Young's Wrestling Weekly. Before we do that, though, Les, let them know where they can get a hold of plenty of stuff that you booked and promoted, Heartland Wrestling, and the very first professional wrestling t-shirt. I imagine that there are quite a few folks who populate those WWE merch stands and AEW merch stands at these shows having no idea that maybe the idea would have come along at some point, but we can honestly say were it not for Les Thatcher and the Briscoes, there would not have been wrestling t-shirts.
That's true. I came up with the idea and started kicking around in 71. I sat down with Jack and Jerry in 72 and was mentioning my frustration. Jack said, well, why don't we do this? So we did and came out with the first wrestling t-shirt, the Briscoe Booster t-shirt, with Jack and Jerry's image and autographs, the artwork by Jerry the King Lawler. And you can get that copy of that t-shirt on Pro Wrestling Tees currently. You also get a t-shirt that says, I'm a Les Thatcher guy, if you happen to be one. Talking about the videos, there's the Lost Developmental Tapes, Volumes 1 and 2. They're both two DVD sets with over 6 hours of content. And those are from the HWA developmental territory. We'll see stars, current stars of that time. You'll see guys like Nigel McGuinness and Jamie Noble and guys who yet to work their way up to the main roster or to national prominence. And those are available at joe-dombrowski.com and wrestlinglibrary.com. And then, of course, the Pillman 20-year anniversary, 4-DVD set covering all of the Pillman shows from 1998, 99, 2000, 2001, with some of the greatest stars of the current of those times in professional wrestling. It featured stars from both WWE, WCW, and ECW, all under the same roof at the same time. And there's 15 hours of content in this four DVDs, and with interviews and background stars that appeared on the show talking about Brian Pillman. Brian Jr. and I have a segment on there talking about when he was a child and attending those shows. And you can get those at PillmanShows.com or at the Joe-Dombrowski.com or the ProWrestlingLibrary.com as well. So check them out, man, and I think you'll enjoy them.
Well, brother, you don't have any particular plans this weekend?
Oh, man, you know what? At this point, what are you going to do special? I don't know. After 82 of these going around the sun, I don't know anything special too. So, but I'm going to relax and kick back and, I don't know, reminisce, I guess, Vic, kind of relax. Yeah, got to go. One thing I'm going to do is go out and get a couple Powerball tickets.
Oh, my goodness. $800 million.
Yes.
Can you imagine? What a birthday present that would be.
Wow. You know what I've said, though, to a couple of my friends? I said if I were to win it, I'd probably have a heart attack and never be able to spend a dime. I can tell you, if I were to win $800 million, Tony Khan can rest easy. I'm not coming after you, Tony. And Triple H can rest easy, too. I'm not going to answer him. You know, I've told Dr. Tom, if I want something like that, I'm going to go out here, one of these empty department stores in these strip malls along Kingston Pike here in Knoxville, and I'm going to buy us one of those, and we're going to set up the best damn pro wrestling training center away from the performance center that this business has ever seen. So got to do something wrestling related, right?
Oh, my goodness. All right. So fantasy book this for me. Who would you hire as your coaches?
Well, a guy named Tom Pritchard would be one. I mean, because he's living here, he and I. But you know what? I would bring in guest coaches just like the PC does. And those would be Rudy Gonzalez and Rip Rogers and, you know, guys like that I've worked with in the past, Lance Storm and you know, Mike Mondo, once we get set up at where we can do multiples and everything, I'd like to do some things with some of these younger guys who think the same way I do that I see on Twitter doing, you know, putting, you know, examples and suggestions out for the young talent. But, yeah. And you know what I'd even thought about with that kind of money is to give a scholarship or two out every year.
I like it.
You know, to somebody worthy, you know, that's really busting their ass and trying hard. We will also teach bookers for anyone listening. They are not at a premium. That's for damn sure.
Hadn't even bought the ticket yet. He's already spent the money.
Yeah, there you go. There you go.
So we're wrapping this edition of Doc Young's Wrestling Weekly. For the legend, Les Thatcher, my name is Victor Sosa. Thank you so much for taking time out of your weekend to spend some of it here with us. And we will talk to you again next week.